Well, let's get right to it and talk about what's important right now. When are those deadlines for getting our packages shipped and delivered this holiday season? It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. Talking about the U.S. Postal Service this hour and wondering from you, how reliable is your mail delivery service this year? At 1-800-642-1234, you can email us ideas@WPR.org. Our guest is the author of the new book, First Class, the U.S. Postal Service, Democracy, and the Corporate Threat, looking at the past, present, and possible future of our USPS. Christopher W. Shaw joining us this morning. And Christopher, thank you so much for being our guest today.
Good morning. Good to be on.
Let me start by asking you what folks will be thinking of over the holidays. And from your perspective, what would be the deadline for you to be putting packages in the United States Postal Service to make it on time for the holidays this year? When would you make sure your packages were in?
Well, they have official days for everything, depending on which kind of mail service you're using. But I guess I would be looking to try to get it 2 weeks out, honestly, if I could, as early as I could get it in the mail, I would want to, given what happened last year. They say they're going to do better this year, and hopefully they will, but I'd plan ahead.
Well, you're a policy analyst, you're a historian, you're the author of the new book. What are you projecting for this holiday season in the United States Postal Service?
I think that they're going to do better. I hope that they will. I mean, the problem last year was that the Postal Service has been shorthanded now, really ever since the financial crisis back in 2008. And then last year, there was that issue was compounded by the fact that you also had a lot of employees who were absent because they were isolating due to exposure to COVID or they were sick with COVID. So that was the main issue. And this year they have planned ahead and they've hired some additional people and they've also got some additional space for processing mail up and running. So they're planning to do better. And I hope that they will. I expect that they will.
And yet last month, the Postal Service changed its delivery standards, and that has evidently led to more slowdowns in mail delivery. So give us an idea of what changed for the USPS and what that could mean for us this holiday season, Chris.
Well, so on October 1st, they put in a change in delivery service standards. And so what that meant is that for a first class letter, it used to take 3 days to get it anywhere. From anywhere you mailed in the country, it would get delivered anywhere in the country in 3 days. And so the change there in Wisconsin would mean that, whereas in the past, to get it either to the East or West Coast would take 3 days. Now, it can be up to 5 days if you're trying to mail a letter from Wisconsin to New England or Florida or Texas or the Rocky Mountains on the Pacific Coast. So it's kind of the extremities of the country is where the mail has been slowed down the most. So in terms of any Christmas cards you want to mail or things like that, keep in mind that that is now a five day standard.
So as mentioned, the Postmaster General Louis DeJoy said, we quote, we are ready for this holiday season. But what did he say about why the United States Postal Service implemented these delivery standards on October 1, Chris?
The reason given is when he first came in, he said what he wanted to do is to drive out cost. And so his claim is that it's more expensive to get mail somewhere faster than to get it there slower. And the main thing is to take it off of airplanes, which most first-class mail that's traveling any kind of long distance would travel on airplanes these days and get it onto trucks. And so that's supposed to be cheaper. Those cost savings, it's not clear that they will actually occur, but that is what his claim is that it's just cheaper to do it on trucks, and so therefore we're slowing down all the mail nationally.
But this seems to be part of the rub with the United States Postal Service, as you detail in your book, First Class, the U.S. Postal Service, Democracy, and the Corporate Threat, is that for efficiency standards, at one point the U.S. Postal Service said we could use our own fleet of airlines, but for the sake of airlines and their bottom line, that was lobbied against, and at least initially they lost out on the chance for efficiencies that they would see in their own system, Chris. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. Back in the 70s, you started to see some express courier services like Federal Express get up and running. And then in the 1980s, UPS decided that it should have its own aircraft fleet as well. And the Postal Service said, hey, we need to get on this too in order to be efficient. We should have our own fleet of aircraft. But the thing is that the mail is largely carried in the air through commercial passenger airlines, and they like to have those contracts, so they lobbied against it. And then now at this point, the Postal Service also relies a great deal on its its private sector competitors like FedEx and UPS to carry the mail. So because the Postal Service doesn't have its own fleet of aircraft, it has to turn to these other companies and depend on them. And that means that the U.S. mail isn't actually always the first priority for a company like that. If this is a passenger airline, it's going to put passengers first. So there's definitely been problems with having this kind of reliance and lacking its own postal aircraft.
Christopher W. Shaw is an author and historian. He's written multiple books about the U.S. Postal Service and what he sees as ongoing corporate threats to his existence. And I'd be wondering from you how you see the pandemic affecting the Postal Service and its services for you at 1-800-642-1234. You talk about the impact that the 2008 economic recession had on the Postal Service and how they're still struggling to recover from that. But just a few years prior to that, there was a 2006 law that was signed into place that changed the way the post office had to budget just about everything they did. Tell us about this 2006 law, and I'd be interested, Chris, to knowing how common such a law is for other branches of the federal government.
That law is very important when you talk about the Postal Service's financial issues, because it's responsible for maybe 90% of the losses you hear about, because these losses have to do with accounting practices. And so the 2006 law requires the Postal Service to pay its retiree healthcare benefits decades in advance. And so the Postal Service was supposed to make a series of $5.5 billion payments every year on top of everything else that it does. And this has to do with the fact that the Postal Service had actually overpaid into its retiree programs, and returning that money to the Postal Service would have increased the budget deficit. So they came up with this special accounting way to kind of make it seem like the budget deficit wasn't going to be increased when they returned the money to the Postal Service. So that's really the main issue in terms of this postal financial crisis. And this is not a practice that the actuarial writers recommend for how you go about funding such health retirement program.
Christopher, you make it sound like this was a numbers game to make the numbers look better on the federal budget, and then it's an aftermath that the United States Postal Service has had to deal with ever since. Is that an accurate assessment?
That would be a very accurate assessment. That's a very good way to sum it up.
Is there any other federal arm of the federal government that has to operate in such a way?
No, I mean, every other private corporation and arm and government agency, they do this in more of a pay-as-you-go basis. They're not trying to fund like 75 years into the future. That's just not done.
So with your perspective and your new book, how do you see the role of Louis DeJoy as our Postmaster General?
I think that he's come in with a mindset which is not one of a public service. You know, the idea that the Postal Service exists as a essential government service, but instead he comes in with a mindset of the background he comes from, which is the trucking business, and he sees it more as a business. And I think that that's a real conflict, and we're already seeing the results in that with the kind of slowdown we talked about beginning October 1st.
But as you mentioned, there is no business that would have to front load their retirees' health care in the way that the USPS is required by law to do so.
That's right. Yeah, no business would ever try to do that.
Right.
No way.
That's bad business. Last week, President Joe Biden announced plans to nominate two federal officials to the Postal Service's governing board. They would replace two current members who are allies of the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy. Well, what, if any, could these changes mean for DeJoy's future in the post office, Chris?
Well, these two new incoming members are going to shake up the board. So the board currently has a majority of Trump appointees who are the same people who selected Louis DeJoy for the job of Postmaster General, and they've supported his plans and what he's done so far. So with two people coming in, that could shift the dynamic. They could potentially talk about a different sort of agenda going forward, and they could possibly decide to select a new Postmaster General and just come in with entirely new leadership altogether.
Christopher W. Shaw is a historian and policy analyst. His new book, First Class, The U.S. Postal Service, Democracy, and the Corporate Threat. Taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234 this morning. Email ideas at WPR.org. And we're wondering what you're relying on for the Postal Service this holiday season. Our conversation continues throughout the hour, along with your questions about the USPS. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn. And last week, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy talked to the Marketplace Morning Report about the problems at his post office as he sees them.
We haven't met our service standard in the last 10 years. And we've spent significant amount of money chasing diminishing mail volumes around the country and expanding, you know, delivering to expanding addresses, a million a year. That's a recipe for, you know, for disaster.
How would you assess the problems at the post office right now? 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest wrote the book, First Class, The U.S. Postal Service, Democracy, and the Corporate Threat. Christopher W. Shaw continues with our conversation. And Chris, the push to privatize our United States Postal Service is nothing new. In fact, you could argue that this has been ongoing and it just ebbs and flows. But as I understand, as you detail it, the iteration of the post office we have today was largely created in response to an oligopoly of the delivery services in the United States. Is there anything new under the sun when it comes to the push to privatize our post office?
No, there's long been the idea that the Postal Service would work better if it was a for-profit business. But the problem with that idea is that there isn't profit in serving large areas of the country. There isn't profit supplying a high standard of service to many Americans. And so that's why it's a government service. That's why it's in the Constitution. And that would be the problem with privatization, is it would put profit ahead of service. And a lot of people would really lose out access to this important network.
Would there be a path towards privatizing the post office without amending the U.S. Constitution?
That's a question for a constitutional scholar. But I think that it probably could happen, because what you would do is deregulate the postal market, and then you could ultimately sell it. I'm sure they can find a creative way to do that, but maybe it would require a constitutional amendment. I'm not entirely sure on that one.
So it's not about, you know, running it as a business. It's about running it as a service that stretches to all corners of all 50 states for the sake of a little spare change. So in the bigger picture then, Chris, how do you see the philosophies that have guided the Postal Service through its history? What are they?
The philosophy has always been that it exists to help have an informed citizenry, at least dating back to the first president, George Washington. He thought that this could be a service that would help unite the country and connect them to their government and connect them to the news that they need to be informed citizens to know what they were voting about. So that was really the message from the very beginning, and that mission has continued down through the years. And so that's the overriding goal, and you can see that today in the kind of reduced postage rates for newspapers, magazines, books, other things that will inform people and make sure they know what's happening.
Yeah, and so if that's the mission, and as in your role as a historian, how would you say they have succeeded or failed or fallen short?
I think historically the post office has been a great success. You can go all the way back to the 19th century, when the United States had more newspapers circulating than any other country. And that's continued to the present day, with it continues to serve as a hub of information and as a way for people to be informed. So the Postal Service has gone through its struggles over the year, but it's kept the mail moving and kept people communicating with each other and made sure that Americans remained informed.
I should have invited earlier mail carriers to join the conversation and tell us what they see from the inside. The phone number and the email, 1-800-642-1234, to join our conversation with author and historian Christopher Shaw. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Bill and Adam's Friendship, good morning. You're on with Chris Shaw.
Hi. I've been watching the post office for 30 years. My wife is a retired postal employee. And so she worked for him, and I watched it through her eyes. I think that the privatization has been attempted. To add to your author's comment, there and your comment, there is no business that would stay in business if they had to pay 75 years in advance retiree funds for people they don't even haven't even hired yet. I also have worked in the medical field, although I'm not directly involved with medicine. And one of the things that we used to rely on is that if there was an emergency, that the Post Service would be able to get medications out to people. If the postal goes private, how is that going to work? That is the other comment I want to make is that the Postal Service, the most trusted uniform in the nation at that time, a while back, was the post office. The Postal Service people had the biggest trust, and I think that that's something that they're losing. I heard that you're going to ask for postal employees to call in, and I encourage them to. I will tell you that they are hurting for people to work. They need people.
Well, that's it's a good, solid job, as I remember my neighbor as a mail carrier, and I thought it was a good life.
It is a good, solid job. But as has pointed out, things have changed, and it's getting harder and harder to work.
Bill, I appreciate your perspective, and I thank you for that. And I'd ask you, Chris Shaw, what you hear from Bill and his family's experience.
Well, I hear the same thing. With postal workers are overworked. Stress levels are very high. You're seeing very long work weeks with people working, you know, it's not just some standard, not the standard 40 hours anymore, overtime, issues like that. And what's happened is the Postal Service is hiring sort of, they call them non-career employees to come in, and they don't get the same level of benefits or pay as the traditional employees do. And the turnover amongst those employees has been very high, and it takes a while to learn the postal system. So that has been a problem in terms of efficiency, and not that they aren't working very hard, it just takes some time,
right?
And also in terms of service levels. So it's a major issue with the Postal Service, is it going shorthanded now for a number of years.
Let's go to Ann in northern Wisconsin this morning. Ann, you're on with Christopher Shaw.
Yes. First of all, I think there is not enough honor given to the positions of mail carriers, especially the ones that go door to door. But anyway, the question is, I thought that FedEx kind of relies on the postal system to some extent to get, you know, they can get the boxes to the mail, you know, to the post offices, but it's up to the local carriers to get from the post office to, for some of them. I mean,
right.
I know I have FedEx pull up in my backyard, but I just wondered about that.
The last mile delivery. Christopher, what do we know about how private delivery companies rely on our federalized postal service?
Well, this is another example for why a privatized system wouldn't work, because there are a lot of addresses in parts of the country where there isn't a profit to delivering the packages there. So FedEx just hands it off to the postal service, and it's the letter carrier that actually delivers the FedEx packages in those areas. So, again, just showing why you need to have a government service to provide that last mile of delivery.
So I want to talk a moment about the part of your book where email comes up, and how the U.S. Postal Service had a proposal for email way back in the day. Can you give us a little idea about the USPS and its development of technology, and how in some cases it wasn't developed, and why?
Well, the case of email back in the 1970s, there was
70s.
Back in the 70s, there was a lot of discussion of the fact that electronic communications is coming and the Postal Service needs to do something. And unfortunately, you had a postmaster general who didn't act. And then there was a lot of there weren't revenue problems at that time. The mail kept increasing throughout the 80s and 90s. And then around the year 2000, again, there was another proposal to have the Postal Service offer email addresses, but that wasn't acted on either. And in part, that's because you had competitors like UPS lobbying against it happening. So That's why we don't have postal email addresses, but it has been an idea out there for quite some time.
So we all could have had an email address through the Postal Service, but that was another proposal that ended up being lobbied against and losing. And so as opposed to talking about whether or not we continue to diminish the services of the United States Postal Service, what if we talked about what it would take to expand some of the services of the United States Postal Service and what that might mean for those of us who could rely on such services, considering there are large swaths of this country and Wisconsin that still rely on their postal office as a central gathering place. What if it could be more? 1-800-642-1234. Our guest is Chris Shaw. He's a historian, policy analyst, and his new book is First Class, The U.S. Postal Service, Democracy, and the Corporate Threat. We'll continue with your calls after the news. We'll talk about the Postal Service's future and what that could mean for our democracy. Big Picture, I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. You know, not every nation has its own national post, and there have been long been efforts to privatize our deliveries here in the States. So, I'll ask you, how might our life be different without a United States Postal Service? It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. And it's impossible to consider ending the U.S. mail without also considering the almost 400,000 people in Wisconsin who still lack access to a quality broadband service. Those numbers from the FCC. What about you? If you're a mail carrier, what have the changes to the Postal Service meant for you? And if the Postal Service shut down, what would that mean to you? 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Christopher W. Shaw is a historian and policy analyst, and his new book is First Class, The U.S. Postal Service, Democracy, and the Corporate Threat. Let's go to Mike in St. Lawrence this morning. Mike, you're on with Christopher Shaw. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, a couple things. Let me see if I can get all my thoughts together here. I was a rural carrier for about 25 years. I started out as a sub, which is the lowest you can be. I worked my buns off. I learned 6 or 7 routes. I ran out of West Bend. And that's what kept me until I finally got a route. It took me 6 years to get a regular route. But the issues have been going on all the time. I mean, people think it's real easy to be a mail carrier. Just drive down the street and put the mail in the boxes. But you have to case all your mail. You have to learn a case. Sometimes you have 400 customers on a route, 500 customers on a route. You have to know where all those addresses are when you put your mail in the case in the morning. The other thing I think that people should understand is there are like 5 different unions in the Postal Service. And my thought has always been, I talked to fellow carriers too, there's a rural carrier, there's a city carrier, there's a clerk carrier. There's all kinds of different unions. If they could consolidate into one union, I think they'd have a lot more power. And I agree, privatization is not the way to go. We also talked about this over my span. The corporations would take over the big cities where you could do one whole route in one tall building. But they would never deliver to Wyoming and Montana and all the small places where I want to send a letter sometimes. It would never get there or it would cost me $20. So anyway. Those are just my thoughts.
Yeah, that was a perspective we were looking for, Mike. So I thank you so much for sharing it with us this morning at 1-800-642-1234. Chris Shaw, so would there be changes to the Postal Service if you saw it, if all the mail carrier unions could unionize?
Well, so the Postal Service is divided into crafts that have different jobs, and that's where you have different unions. And there have been some attempts. I mean, there were some moments in the 70s when they were bargaining together. There have been some ideas about these different unions merging with each other, like the rural letter carriers and the city letter carriers merging, or the letter carriers merging with the postal clerks. This has been floated around, and certainly in unity there is strength, but for various reasons, it just hasn't happened up to yet.
Let's go to Karen in Sun Prairie this morning. Karen, good morning. You're on with Chris Shaw.
Good morning. I've always wondered about the efficiency, or rather inefficiency, of individual carriers stopping at every single mailbox, not to mention at others who have to walk right up to every single door to deliver mail, as opposed to perhaps having group or banks of mailboxes, say, on every block or every 5 or 10 houses. And I do realize there are people with mobility issues, and they would have to have it delivered directly to their house. But it just seems so primitive to actually have a person physically walking up to every single door.
That's a perfect question, Karen, because I believe Chris Shaw answers it in his book. The USPS did try something similar to mail banks, correct?
Yes, starting in the late 70s, the Postal Service began to move away from door delivery to newly constructed housing, and instead to have what are called cluster box units, and that's where a bunch of mailboxes are grouped together. There are efficiencies there, but there's also issues where it is a reduction in service, and then there's problems with those cluster boxes being targeted by thieves because it provides an opportunity to steal lots of mail all at once. So there are issues associated with that change in the mode of delivery.
But it was an idea that Karen had that the United States Postal Service also had, but it also seemed to come up against some customer blowback that the consumer, the mail consumer, still wants the convenience of having it right there at their door or right at the end of their driveway.
That's right, yeah. And I mean, I think these days with more packages being delivered, there's even more of a desire maybe to get that in what's a more secure location, which is right to the house that it's addressed to.
Let's go to Charlene now, who's in Eau Claire County this morning. Charlene, you're on the air. Good morning.
Well, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm incredibly interested in this because I've been tied to the post office my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was the youngest postmaster ever appointed in a small town here in western Wisconsin. And somewhere in the, probably in the 50s, he decided that the management level was changing dramatically, and he switched to being a rural carrier, which he did then for almost 40 years.
Wow.
I think that the idea, the worst part is that the situation has become, it's no longer a service for the citizens of our country, and those of us who live in the rural areas are really stuck. Because not everybody wants to start their morning at 5 a.m. in a small town, nor do they have any sense of driving around in some of the rural communities. The financial aspects of having to fund the retirement for the future, I think, was just the most insidious move to try to totally bankrupt the Postal Service and make it an object of derision for the country. And we have to stop that. We have to get back to the service model. I live on a rural county road that has only 2 mailboxes in our jurisdiction. And when my normal mailman comes, who's been around 20 years, my mail comes at 2 in the afternoon. Now, that's with a morning paper in it that I count on. But if he has a sub, I might not get that mail until 8:30. And most of the time, I don't even get my paper because it goes to somebody with a similar address. You know, and we have P.O. boxes like W312 County Road ZZ. Out here, it might go to somebody who lives 3 or 4 miles north of me with the same numbers on a different street. So there's been a real bugaboo with leadership going down and hiring inept middle managers who are hiring and not supervising.
Charlene, you make it sound like it's something that your father also found way back in the day and decided to just walk the country.
Yes.
Yeah. I very much appreciate that perspective. Chris, does that sound dissimilar to any of the other stories that have been relayed to you?
Well, no. I mean, this is what happens when you move away from the service model. And it also indicates, again, why you want to have experienced and well-trained employees who and have an adequately staffed agency. So that way people will receive the traditional high quality level of service that is people expect.
Rick in Madison has a question for our guest, Chris Shaw. He's the author of the new book, First Class, The U.S. Postal Service, Democracy and the Corporate Threat. Rick, good morning.
Good morning. My understanding is that Senator Collins of Maine was one of the chief sponsors of this Postal Service retirement prepay deal. I'm wondering if anyone has looked into any campaign contributions to the sponsors before and after this from UPS and FedEx?
Hmm. campaign contributions having some sway over the USPS. Chris, what do you see?
Well, it's absolutely true that UPS and FedEx are two of the biggest lobbies on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. when it comes to donations and being active there, looking out for their interests. In terms of the 2006 law, as I recall it, how it happened is the pre-funding at that time, it wasn't really understood fully that it would be the major issue that it has become. And in part, that's because back at those times, the Postal Service wasn't having financial problems. The revenues were okay. And it kind of just was slipped into the bill there. And people didn't recognize what a problem it was at the time. So
couldn't you unslip it from the bill? If this is a near unanimous discussion about how ridiculous or unique this is, couldn't it just be legislation to fix it?
Well, that's what they've been talking about for 10 years now. And you're right that pretty much everybody who looked at this issue says that this is a terrible idea and it needs to be gotten rid of. The problem is with the inability to pass much legislation these days in Washington, D.C., and with the Postal Service not necessarily being at the very top of the agenda, that hasn't happened to this point. But that is something that everybody says should happen.
Hey, Chris, you talk in First Class about the potential effects of deregulation and outright privatization of a national postal service. And you detail some of the other places we've seen this around the world. Give us some idea of what it's like to be a nation without a national postal service.
It means that the level of service is going to go down. And at the same time, in terms of what's happened in other countries, the prices have continued to go up. So they can decide to do something like we'll only deliver mail every other day. We will close down almost all or all of the nation's post offices. And, you know, we'll maybe put a counter in a convenience store or something. But of course, especially if you live in a rural area, a store like that could shut down and you could be left without service. So just the thing that seemed incredibly basic to us and that we all expect in terms of delivery and access, that all goes up for grabs once the profit motive is what's calling the shots.
So if we were to say, like a couple examples you give, New Zealand, Sweden, Norway, what it would be like to get mail there today?
Well, for New Zealand was one of the first countries to move in this direction, and they were headed in this direction back in the late 80s. And in the case of New Zealand, I mean, they at one time had over 900 post offices, and there's only a fraction of those that are up and running today. I think a little over 100 are up today in terms of post offices. And then they've also made three mail deliveries per week. That's the standard if you live in a city. And in rural areas, they still are delivering mail 5 days a week. But those are the kinds of changes that have happened. At the same time, again, it's not like the postage rates have really gone down. So it's not that the cost has gotten much better either.
Do I remember this correctly? You can still mail a potato in the U.S. Postal Service, put a mailing label on it, and it'll get shipped?
I haven't tried that recently, but I think that, yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of rules saying that the dimensions of things have to be exactly in a particular way in the way a private shipper would do. So there are odd sized items that you can send through the postal system that a private shipper would not be interested in handling.
Including the shape of a potato. We're talking to Chris Shaw. He is the author of the new book, First Class, a look at our postal service, past, present, and future. You think the postal service should be privatized or closed down where you are? We'd be interested in taking your call this morning at 1-800-642-1234. Email always ideas@WPR.org. I tell you what, we'll look at solutions when we continue with our guest, Chris Shaw, here on The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is the Ideas Network. Eight states now conduct all-mail elections. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and the Postal Service says they sent or received more than 135 million ballots during last year's general election session. And there remains zero evidence of rampant voter or election fraud, although some conspiracy theorists may still be theorizing. Those remain unfounded. So if you voted by mail last year, what was that experience like for you? Count on the USPS, 1-800-642-1234. What do you think it would be like if it disappeared? Christopher Shaw is a historian, policy analyst, and his new book is First Class, the U.S. Postal Service, Democracy, and the Corporate Threat. And what is the impact of vote by mail for the United States Postal Service, Chris?
Well, it's one of the important services that the Postal Service provides, and it's one that's growing in importance as we see states shifting more towards a vote-by-mail model. It, in terms of the postage, well, it provides a little additional postage, but it's really a drop in the bucket. I mean, you said 135 million ballots, and that's a lot of pieces of mail, but the Postal Service delivers many, many more times mail than that. So it's definitely something that the postal system is equipped to handle.
We talked earlier in the hour about services that never came to light from the USPS, like postal service email. So would the Postal Service be better served expanding its services in terms of its own lifespan and in terms of fighting back the calls for privatization? Are there other services that the USPS could be offering, Chris?
I believe that it would. And if you look historically, the Postal Service in the past has expanded. So, in fact, the package delivery was not something that the postal system did until 1913. Before that, you just had a handful, an oligopoly, really, of private package delivery companies that were engaging in a lot of price gouging, that weren't providing service to certain areas. And so there was a big push, grassroots push, to get the post office to start delivering packages. And so we have parcel post, and that's why packages are delivered today. Another service that the post office used to provide was it operated a savings bank. So I think thinking expansively in these ways and thinking about the ways that the Postal Service can best serve the American people, that's part of our history. And I think it should be part of our future as well.
Let's go to Glenn in New London this morning. Glenn, good morning. You're on with Christopher Shaw.
Yes, good morning. Something that I've thought about as this is brought up is I was in the military, and we would ship classified documents by registered mail. And I would have to go down and sign for documents at the base post office. Now, once if you privatize the post office, and once those classified documents left the hands of a government employee, you've lost security.
Yeah, and geez, Glenn, I never thought of this in terms of national security. Chris, what do we know about that?
Well, the Postal Service, the mail, once you put a postage stamp on it, just even a first-class letter that you would send that wouldn't even have anything to do in terms of national security, there's a lot of privacy protections there that we don't have with other forms of communications.
Glenn also points out that the mailbox is also considered federal property, correct?
That's right. Yeah, the only entity that can access that mailbox legally is the Postal Service. They're the only ones who can put an item in the mailbox.
So how would that work with a privatized delivery system?
Well, there's been some people who think, well, okay, you'd have a private company, they pay a fee to access the mailbox, for instance, or you could just get rid of that monopoly on the mailbox altogether. So then maybe you'd have multiple entities accessing a mailbox, and that does raise some questions about security, because at this point, you know the person who's supposed to put the mail in there is your letter carrier, who's wearing a uniform, but then you could maybe have different people putting things in the mailbox. So this is another issue, that security of the U.S. mail is an important part of the service.
Chris Shaw, historian, policy analyst, his new book, First Class, the U.S. Postal Service, Democracy, and the Corporate Threat. Jolene's in Chippewa Falls. Good morning, Jolene. You're on the morning show.
Good morning. Yes, I recently retired from my job, and so my pension and 401k were sent to me. These were delivered by a private carrier, FedEx, and thrown on my front steps. They were not a registered letter. They were not anything. They could have been stolen easily or blown away. We need to get back our postal service and registered letters and signing for things like we used to have.
If that would have been taken from your doorstep, Jolene, what would have happened to you?
We go hunting. I don't even know if I would have known it arrived or was sent until 2-3 weeks later. And then started the process to you know, find out where this check went.
It's just another great example, Jolene, and I'm glad you've added it to our conversation. Thank you. Other solutions on the horizon, Christopher Shaw, the Postal Service Reform Act of 2021, where does it stand and what would it do?
The main purpose of that is to get rid of the pre-funding requirement.
Okay.
And it's something where there's a number of people who've signed on. There's bipartisan support, Republicans and Democrats, but as of yet, no action and a vote does not seem to be imminent.
All right. The other thing that you write about in your book is the POCAG. Explain this to me.
That is an acronym. It stands for the Post Office Consumer Action Group. And so the idea is that you have lobbyists for FedEx, for UPS, for the corporations. They're all trying to influence what the Postal Service can and cannot do and how it does what it does do. And the average citizen doesn't have their own lobbying organization. So the idea is that would be the people's lobby. And the way it would work is the post office would deliver a postcard or a letter a few times a year that would give the average residential patron the opportunity to pay a small membership fee, and that would allow them to join the organization. And then that money could be used to hire a staff, and that staff would be the people who would advocate on behalf of the American citizens to make sure the Postal Service keeps running the way it ought to and remains the government agency that we can depend on and also puts the average person up as a priority.
So the POCAG would create the opportunity for us to collectively as citizens to put somebody to advocate for actually getting a vote on, say, the Postal Service Reform Act of 2021 and at least getting our legislators on the record.
That's right. Exactly. That would be a powerful lobbying group. I mean, it wouldn't, there's a lot of 160 million residential, addresses in this country. And that would definitely put a fire there when you have a big group like that that's advocating for something to have some action and get some movement.
We're running out of time here, Chris Shaw, but as you look at it from your historian point of view, your policy analyst point of view, could we have what we have today as a United States of America without a United States Postal Service? And explain.
Well, the post office got started in 1775, and it's been integral to binding the nation together. That's its mission. And serving everyone in a democratic, equal way, I think, is a big part of the highest ideals that this country has aspired to realize. And so connecting people together, prioritizing these important services, and really being a representation of democracy in our daily life, I think it's an important role that the post office has played, and I hope to see it continue to do that in the future.
Christopher W. Shaw, thank you for this hour.
Thank you. Good talking with you.
Pleasure's mine. Chris Shaw, historian, policy analyst, and his new book, First Class, the U.S. Postal Service, Democracy, and the Corporate Threat. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Kate Archer-Kent today. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.